Coming up, deporting undocumented immigrants. The Supreme Court takes up the controversial issue this coming week. Kim Lawton has our report. Also, Kate Olson on using ancient worship practices to try to experience the presence of God.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Welcome, I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. Pope Francis and Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew, the Orthodox spiritual leader, say they hope their unprecedented joint visit to Greece Saturday is a sign of solidarity amid the escalating migrant crisis. The two top religious leaders also want their trip to the Greek island of Lesbos to encourage political leaders to find new solutions. The massive flow of refugees leaving the Middle East, Asia, and Africa has generated a humanitarian emergency. This week, police along the border between Greece and Macedonia fired tear gas and rubber bullets into crowds of protesting migrants. Several nations have closed their borders to incoming migrants, and thousands have been stranded in makeshift camps. European leaders continue debating how to stem the massive flow of people. Meanwhile, aid workers continue scrambling to provide food and other supplies. This week, the non-governmental International Crisis Group released a statement calling on world leaders to, quote, take a more coordinated, better principled action to address the global refugee crisis. The group also noted that 86% of the total number of displaced people in the world are not in Europe, but in developing countries. Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders surprised many political observers by interrupting his campaign in New York's primary election next Tuesday to attend a conference at the Vatican. Sanders was among dozens of speakers at a meeting organized by the Pontifical Academy of Social Sciences. The conference commemorated the 25th anniversary of a landmark encyclical on the economy and social justice written by Pope John Paul II. Sanders gave a short speech about the urgency of a moral economy. The Islamic Society of North America and members of the Interfaith Shoulder to Shoulder campaign urged the Democratic and Republican parties to take a strong stance against anti-Muslim bigotry. They asked the parties to add explicit language to their platforms at the upcoming conventions that would condemn discrimination against all religious minorities.
As faith leaders, we stand here committed to protecting the religious freedom guaranteed to all of us in the First Amendment.
Also last week, evangelical pastors braved a Washington spring storm to pray for the nation at a rally on the National Mall. Leaders, including Ann Graham Lotz, Billy Graham's daughter, said they wanted to ask for God's blessing on America. They urged churches across the country to pray throughout the election season. On Monday, the Supreme Court will take up a case surrounding the controversial issue of deporting undocumented immigrants. In 2014, President Obama issued executive orders that would have deferred the deportation of nearly 4 million people, but the plan was never implemented. Several states filed suit, arguing it was an unconstitutional use of presidential authority. Lower courts agreed. But the president's plan has support in many parts of the faith community, including the U.S. Catholic bishops. Kim Lawton traveled to Mexico for this special report.
This is the city of Nogales. On one side of the massive fence is Nogales, Arizona, and on the other, Nogales, Sonora in Mexico. Here on the Mexican side, just a few hundred yards from the border, a Catholic binational ministry called the Kino Border Initiative, or KBI, runs the aid center for deported migrants. It provides meals, clothing, and other basic support for hundreds of migrants who've been deported from the United States. Leaders of the initiative say the work was motivated by Catholic teachings that urge the promotion of human dignity.
We all saw and see how much human dignity is at risk here on the border. And I think for us, and this comes from a very faith-based place, human dignity really matters to us.
Because of that concern for human dignity, the U.S. Catholic bishops and other church leaders are urging the Supreme Court to uphold the president's plan to defer deportation for many undocumented immigrants, especially those with long-standing family ties in the U.S.
To the church, family is the fundamental block of life, and so anything that can be done to make sure families stay together is important to the church.
But other advocates say human dignity is violated when unauthorized immigrants are not deported. Roy Beck is president of Numbers USA, a group that works to reduce illegal immigration numbers.
Millions of American people are harmed by the fact that there are millions of people in this country illegally taking jobs. If you do not have deportation as a final resort for people who break immigration laws, you don't have immigration laws.
The Pew Research Center estimates there are about 11 million unauthorized immigrants living in the United States. In 2015, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement deported more than 235,000 of them, calling them a threat to border security and public safety. Most of those deportees are from Mexico, Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador.
The deported migrants at the KBI Center have little money and few belongings, and most have been unable to find work in Mexico. The center serves two hot meals a day and offers spiritual support. Experts provide legal advice and referrals for other social services. Jesuit Father Sean Carroll is executive director of the initiative.
KBI is very much inspired by this passage from Matthew 25, this image that Jesus presents. Whenever you did for the least of these, you did it for me.
Retired married couple Billy Greenwood and Paul Allen come every winter from their home in Iowa to volunteer at the center.
We really have affinity to the social justice teachings of the Catholic Church, and I think this is a way that we try to put that into practice.
We both taught in our careers. And part of the teaching was social justice issues. And so we both say, well, now that we're done talking about it, let's start doing something about it.
Armando Martinez says KBI's help has been invaluable. Martinez went to the U.S. as a teenager and lived there for 33 years, much of the time working in construction. He got married and has children who are U.S. citizens. 2 years ago, Martinez says authorities discovered his undocumented status when he went to pay a traffic ticket. He was detained and then deported.
I had to leave all my stuff behind. I couldn't go home no more. So it's a really great place. Look, like we come to eat, we get to shower, we don't sleep on the streets. It's everything.
For many people of faith, the issue of family separation is key in debates about immigration and deportation. That's why they support President Obama's executive actions that would defer deportation for some parents of legal permanent residents and U.S. citizens, and also for people who were brought to the U.S. as children.
Perhaps the children have documents, the parents do not. I think the parents live in great fear of being arrested either in their home or in their workplace or bringing their children to school. The children are afraid that one day they're going to come home and their parent or parents are not going to be there.
I wish that the people who talk about this would at least acknowledge that this issue of separation has happened because our government has not enforced immigration laws. We should not have these mixed families who have been embedded in our society for years, some of them 10, 20 years. That's a failure of our government to protect its vulnerable citizens.
Beck believes the president's orders are unconstitutional.
The fact that he would reward millions of people who've broken the law with work permits. That's where the damage comes. That's where he creates the tremendous injustice against the American workers who are so struggling.
Beck urges faith leaders advocating about the issue to also consider the Catholic social teaching that nations have the right to secure their borders.
Their autonomy is to be respected. their ability to say who can come and how many can come is to be respected. It's part of the rights of people to gather themselves in self-determining national communities, every national community.
Nations have the right to secure their borders. But at the same time, if migrants cannot have a dignified way of life, so access to a job that provides adequate food and shelter for their families, if they're not safe, then they do have a right to migrate. And so the right to sovereignty, it is a right, but it's not an absolute right. And it doesn't exist at the expense of human dignity.
Our country has a responsibility to protect its border, especially to deal with things like drug trafficking and weapons trafficking, human trafficking. But all that says is that for the economic migrant, we need to find legal ways for people to be able to enter the country.
The U.S. Catholic Church has long supported comprehensive immigration reform as the best solution to the deportation debate. KBI advocates for policy changes and seeks to educate church members and the general public about immigration issues. In one program, U.S. high school students are brought in to volunteer at the center. On this day, a team came from the Catholic Brophy College Preparatory School in Phoenix.
Immigration is such a large part of our social and political environment in Phoenix and Arizona, and getting to come down here and experience the migrants' lives and stories is something that kind of brings us closer to the issue.
Sophomore Michael Grindy says he was deeply touched by his experience.
Pope Francis talked about the encounter, the aspect of encounter, and I find that very important in my, you know, daily life. And this, you know, is encounter at its best, you know, encountering the immigrant face-to-face conversation. And so that's where I find Jesus Christ, is through encounter. And so, you know, right there, you want to see Jesus Christ, look in there.
Pope Francis has made the issue of migration a priority of his papacy. In February, during a high-profile visit to the U.S.-Mexico border, he urged that the immigration crisis be measured not with numbers, but rather with names, stories, and families. U.S. bishops have begun holding special border masses attended by people on both sides of the border.
Even though there is a wall which separated us, we are one in Christ, and that's what the teaching of the church is, that there are no frontiers, there are no borders within the family of the church. Yes, there have to be borders for countries, but in the Lord's family, there are no borders.
That may be the case for the church, but Beck says it's not an adequate basis for determining public policy.
Certainly the church ought to be responding to every person in need that comes on their doorstep. And so this is what the church ought to be. It's a different issue, though, to say whether people are to be given lifetime residency or lifetime citizenship, lifetime work permits. It's more ethically complicated than they often make it seem.
But Carol says the church's humanitarian help is just one part of promoting the common good.
One of our great strengths, I think, is to make visible in appropriate ways the migrant men, women, and children that we serve. And the more visible they become, even to our political leaders, then I think the more that will change their minds and hearts and help them find the political will to pass immigration reform that's just and humane.
The Supreme Court is expected to issue its decision in the deportation case by the end of June. I'm Kim Lawton at the border between Mexico and Arizona.
In other news, Muslim leaders gathered in Turkey for a five-day summit that tackled some of the Islamic world's most pressing issues. More than 30 heads of state attended the Organization of Islamic Cooperation Conference, where participants discussed a 10-year plan of action. They debated how best to combat extremism within Muslim nations and counter Islamophobia in the rest of the world. They also called for a new peace process to end the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. In Nigeria, marches and prayers marked the two-year anniversary of the abduction by Boko Haram militants of 276 schoolgirls. The kidnapping sparked international outrage and a global effort with the hashtag #BringBackOurGirls. The Alliance Defending Freedom, a Christian nonprofit organization, called for members of Boko Haram to be prosecuted. More than 200 of the girls are still missing. Archbishop of Canterbury Justin Welby, leader of the Worldwide Anglican Communion, is receiving praise for how he and his family have handled surprising new revelations about his background. A DNA test earlier this month determined that Welby's biological father was not whiskey salesman Gavin Welby, as had been long thought. It was Sir Anthony Montague Brown, a former aide to Winston Churchill. The news came as a shock to both Welby and his 86-year-old mother. She released a statement admitting to what she described as a brief alcohol-fueled liaison just prior to her marriage to Welby. The Archbishop said many people experience upheavals in their family life. He said his identity comes from his faith, not genetics. On our calendar for Baha'is, sundown April 20th marks the beginning of the 12-day Festival of Ridvan. It celebrates the founder of their faith, Baha'u'llah, declaring his position as the promised one of all religions. Also this week, Buddhists in many countries, including Thailand and Sri Lanka, celebrate the new year for 3 days. And on Friday evening, Jews around the world begin their 8-day observance of Passover, when families gather for a special meal, a Seder, to recall their ancestors' exodus from Egypt. Now, a special report on spirituality. Correspondent Kate Olson discovered an Episcopal church in Richmond, Virginia, to which worshipers are drawn by its ancient practices for experiencing God's presence. This past winter, she also visited a prominent religion author who spoke of her mysticism, discovering God everywhere.
As a Sunday of worship winds down at St. Stephen's Episcopal Church in Richmond, what's known here as the evening community gathers for the Celtic Evensong and Communion service. This contemplative offering has become the most popular of 7 services over a weekend, drawing hundreds of people. St. Stephen's rector is Gary Jones.
I imagine God is very much active and present in people from all sorts of walks of life and tradition, and if they find a way to open themselves up to that reality by participating with us, then we've accomplished what we've set out to do.
Jones created a liturgy drawn from ancient Christian worship, centered on a personal encounter with the divine.
The aim, very simply, is to assist in drawing people deeper into their experience of God, who's already with them. We aren't giving them God somehow, but to help to open them up to an awareness, a deeper awareness of God's love for them, God's forgiveness, the hope that God offers, and God's just essential presence.
There are periods of meditation throughout the service, with a liturgical team joining the congregation in silent prayer as the service begins.
What we discovered was people started coming earlier and earlier to the church because they saw this was a place full of prayer and they wanted to be still.
Sometimes in the face of the small alienations of my life, I find myself hiding on my classroom's orange carpet again.
Rather than a sermon, people share their personal experience of the divine.
As he faced the reality that he didn't fit the mold, I wonder if Jesus felt like me, a bit of a weirdo, an oddball.
And Holy Communion is open to all.
This is the table, not of the church, but of the Lord.
So we tell the congregation every Sunday, it doesn't matter to us who you are, where you come from, what spiritual tradition, or if you don't have any. We believe this is God's invitation to you, to all of you, to know the very near presence of God within yourself, within everyone around you, and in our fellowship together.
For church historian Diana Butler Bass, the worship experience at St. Stephen's is responding to what she sees as a profound change in people's understanding of God.
For much of the last millennium across Western Christianity, we've understood God primarily as being up, and yet that vision of God is the very vision of God that is now being questioned and in many cases rejected. And what is happening, if people still choose to believe in God, which most Americans do, they are developing new understandings of who that God is. And God has moved from up there to all around us.
Having studied churches for the past two decades, Bass explores this new understanding with faith communities across the country.
The idea that God is really, truly with us, and that we're not just sending our prayers up some elevator shaft, you know, to some far off place in heaven.
Bass says this theological shift is at the heart of a revolution in which thousands of people are going through a spiritual transformation.
People don't want to just receive truth from an institution. They want to participate with a tradition and make a truth that is meaningful for their own lives.
Bass considers herself part of this revolution. A Christian, she says an exclusivist sermon drove her out of the church to find God in the world, including along the banks of the Potomac River.
It was literally a matter of putting myself into the world, opening myself to hearing the world around me speak, and then seeing with wider eyes. That's really mysticism, and it's not just available to someone who is technically trained in practices of deep contemplation. I'm a mom who's a writer who lives in Virginia, and I'm a mystic.
Finding God in nature and the world is a hallmark of mystics from many traditions throughout history. Today, a leading poll shows that 1 in 2 Americans say they have had a mystical experience, a moment of religious or spiritual awakening that has transformed their lives.
That statistic has doubled in my lifetime, and statistics don't do things like that.
For Michael Sweeney, who leads family ministry at St. Stephen's, a mystical experience while camping opened his eyes to see the connections between the holy and the natural world.
When I look at scripture and Moses in the burning bush, Jesus in the wilderness, certainly there are examples in our tradition of the holy manifest in nature. But it didn't feel like that connection was made clear in the church of my upbringing. And so it kind of took me hitting the road with my backpack and my tent and seeing Glacier National Park and Sequoia National Park, sleeping under those trees, to start to make that connection and realize that it has been there all along.
Attorney Millie Kane grew up in the Episcopal Church, but explored other paths, including Buddhist meditation and yoga.
And it wasn't that there was a failure on the part of the church, you know, at all. It was just I was hungry for a more visceral experience of the divine. And it's such a gift to experience that together in community, that awakening of the God within.
Being part of a worshiping community reconnects us with this experience of holiness, Jones says, healing our sense of separation and loneliness.
So we hope that you would leave an experience with this deeper feeling of connectedness to people you don't know yet, even, and a deeper sense of compassion, you know, wanting to care for people to whom you're connected so intimately.
The weekend of worship closes with Compline, a candlelit service based on the monastic practice of ending the day together in prayer.
It's an ancient experience that human beings have had for a long, long time. And if the church can help to awaken that, draw us deeper into it, it leads to a whole other way of life.
For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, this is Kate Olson in Richmond, Virginia.
That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook and watch us anytime on the PBS app for iPhones and iPads. There's much more on our website. Join us at pbs.org/religionethics. As we leave you, music from St. Stephen's Episcopal Church in Richmond, Virginia.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Be more. PBS.